Hello, this is Kelly from the Talking Information Center, and today is the 12th, Friday the 12th of June, and I will be reading from the Taunton Daily Gazette. The first article is titled, Middleborough Fire Chief Resigns After Administrative Leave, and it's written by Emma Rindlisbacher. Middleborough Fire Chief Owen Thompson, who was placed on administrative leave due to a personal matter, Middleborough Fire Chief Owen Thompson, who was placed on administrative leave due to a personnel matter, will resign from the position effective June 30th, 2026. He wrote in a letter to the Middleborough Select Board in May. The letter was attached to the Monday, June 8th, 2026 Select Board meeting agenda, along with a copy of a heavily redacted separation agreement. It is unclear why specifically Thompson was placed on leave. Middleborough interim town manager Joe Perkins previously told the Gazette that Thompson is on leave due to a personnel matter and that the town doesn't discuss personnel matters. Thompson was appointed as fire chief in 2022. Middleborough Fire Department is currently being led by interim fire chief Dana Fontaine, who is a retired Middleborough fire captain. The next article is, Councillor Says New Leadership Needed, and it's written by Emma Rindlisbacher. Taunton Election Director Mark Pacheco's contract is up for renewal, and some members of the Taunton City Council are considering a change in leadership. At the Tuesday, June 9th, 2026 City Council meeting, Councillor David Chavez said, I believe it's time for new leadership in the Elections Department, citing all the information that had come to me over the last couple of weeks to a month. City Councilor Deborah Botelho said that she wanted to postpone the decision whether to reappoint Pacheco, so I can talk to Mr. Pacheco directly regarding these allegations so I can make an informed decision. Neither Chavez nor Botelho specified what allegations or information they were referring to. Ultimately, the City Council voted 5-4 to postpone a vote on Pacheco's contract to a later date. Botelho declined to comment after the meeting, and Chavez declined to identify any specific allegations regarding Pacheco. Taunton Mayor Shauna O'Connell, who requested Pacheco's reappointment, touted Pacheco's qualifications in a written statement after the City Council meeting and harshly criticized councilors for relying upon false statements and gossip, rather than the recommendations of the people who work directly with the elections director. She said that the city council's actions could impact the morale of other city employees. The message city employees received tonight is that no matter how hard they work, no matter how much they give to the city, lies and misinformation by a small number of people can result in losing their jobs. This undermines morale, destabilizes our workforce, and encourages our best employees to look for work somewhere else where they will be appreciated. Elections Department Subject of Controversy. The Taunton Elections Department has been the subject of controversy over the past year. In 2025, Pacheco alleged that an elected official was disruptive and had single-handedly delayed results for the city's entire election during election night of the September 23rd preliminary election. Pacheco did not identify the elected official, but surveillance footage obtained by the Gazette identified the elected official as City Councilor John McCall. According to a report written by Pacheco, McCall's actions on election night included following a city employee in near lockstep, as well as preventing the door from closing, therefore blocking the exit, and also being argumentative and disruptive. McCall, at a later city council meeting, said he was concerned about what he said was an uncensored tabulator unsecured tabulator during the night of the election. Pacheco acknowledged that one flash drive that contained election results did not have a seal on it, as it should have. However, Pacheco said that other safeguards worked as intended, and ultimately the election was not compromised. Ultimately, in a 5-4 vote, the Taunton City Council voted not to discipline McCall, other than asking him to apologize to an election worker whose security footage showed was followed by McCall. McCall, for his part, said that I was just doing my job that evening and that he was raising concerns about the lack of a seal on the flash drive. Disgusted. View from City Councilor and Mayor. City Councilor Philip Duarte said he was disgusted by this evening's shenanigans regarding the reappointment of Elections Director Mark Pacheco in a written statement after the meeting. It is clear that several of my colleagues are determined to block Mr. Pacheco's reappointment based on allegations and accusations that have been repeatedly investigated, thoroughly reviewed, and ultimately dismissed, he said. What we need is not a change in leadership in the Elections Department, it is a change in the City Council. Taunton Mayor Shauna O'Connell said Pacheco is highly respected by his staff and that his professionalism and attention to detail have benefited both the city and its voters. He is one of the few elections directors in Massachusetts to have earned the highest level of professional certification available, reflecting his expertise and commitment to election administration, she said. A dedicated city worker, an outstanding employee, a husband, and a father, came before council for his reappointment and did not receive the consideration he has earned through exceptional work. Ultimately, councilors Barry Sanders, David Poitier, Scott Martin, Duarte, and Botelho voted to table the matter to a later city council meeting, with councilors Ed Correa, Deborah Carr, Chavez, and McCall voting against. Chavez told the Gazette that he doesn't anticipate changing my mind regarding his desire to find a different elections director. I was ready to vote tonight, he said. And the next article is, hosting World Cup matches means closures, delays in Foxborough. And it's written by Jansen McNair. Gillette Stadium's first of seven World Cup matches is this Saturday, June 13th. With delays, game day road restrictions, and impacts to local services expected in and around Foxborough. The 2026 FIFA World Cup is taking place in 16 cities in the United States, Mexico, and Canada. Foxborough will host seven at Gillette Stadium starting June 13th, which will be referred to as Boston Stadium for the duration of the sporting event. Restaurants and commercial businesses are generally expected to remain open for the event to capitalize on the influx of visitors, but some services may be impacted on game days in Foxborough. Here's what to expect in Foxborough this weekend. Mass General Brigham to close for Foxborough's first World Cup game. Mass General Brigham announced it will close its Foxborough locations on June 13th. The location is in Patriot Place. These facilities will be inaccessible due to security restrictions and significant traffic in the area, according to the company. This includes the Brigham and Women's Urgent Care at 2020 Patriot Place. The facilities have announced full-day closures on each of the seven game days in the area. Foxborough Station closed to commuters on game days. Foxborough Station will not be available for commuters on days of Boston Stadium's World Cup matches, as the line will be running 14 express trains from South Station to Foxborough Station. These services are expected to carry many up to 20,000 passengers per match day and will require pre-purchased tickets via the MBTA M-Ticket app, World Cup Boston said on its website. Crowding is expected at South Station on match days starting up to 6 hours before kickoff. The station is also expected to be busy with fans returning from the stadium for up to 5 hours after the final whistle. Most commuter rail trains will be less frequent on game days, according to the Massachusetts Bay Transit Authority. Here's a look at some restrictions expected. Fairmont Line. On match days, no service to Readville. Fall River, New Bedford Line. June 8th through July 12th, connecting trains to and from East Taunton will not operate. Only direct trains between South Station and Fall River or New Bedford will run. Franklin-Foxborough Line. On match days, no commuter rail service to Foxborough or between Readville and Windsor Gardens. Shuttle buses between Forge Park 495 and Walpole connect riders to Providence Line at Canton Junction. Needham Line. June 13th and 14th, no weekend train service. Local buses connect to Orange and Green Lines. Stoughton Line. On weekday matches, shuttle buses replace train service between Canton Junction and Stoughton. Is the Patriots Hall of Fame open during the World Cup? No, the Patriots Hall of Fame announced last month that it is closed until the World Cup concludes in July. Due to the FIFA World Cup event, the Patriots Hall of Fame will be closed beginning May 14, 2026, through the conclusion of the event, according to the Hall. Patriots Pro Shop moves to new location for World Cup. Patriots Pro Shop has relocated for the duration of the local World Cup events, now residing in South Marketplace at Patriot Place. Summer Street partially closed in downtown Boston. Summer Street will have some closures for Foxborough's World Cup matches, each affecting the westbound side of the road to varying degrees. Here's the schedule. Match days with partial westbound closure. Tuesday, June 16th. Tuesday, June 23rd. Friday, June 26th. On these dates, the westbound approach on Summer Street will be reduced to one travel lane, one emergency vehicle lane. Match days with full westbound closure. Saturday, June 13th, Friday, June 19th, Monday, June 29th, and Thursday, July 9th. Traffic pattern impacts near Gillette Stadium. Day of road closures in the Foxborough area are expected to be similar to Patriots games for the World Cup. Here's what to expect. Downtown Boston. Roads are expected to be much busier than usual on match days from up to 5 hours before kickoff and up to 5 hours after the final whistle, with fans and tournament officials traveling to and from the stadium. Details of temporary traffic management measures are in restricted access areas that are in place for the tournament around the FIFA Fan Festival, Boston, and key event locations are available on the City of Boston website. Routes to and from the stadium at Foxborough. Route 1 and Interstates 495 and 95 are expected to be much busier than usual on match days. Traveling toward the stadium on match days is expected to be busier than usual from up to 4 hours before kickoff and away from the stadium for up to 3 hours after final whistle, with fans and tournament officials traveling to and from the stadium. Foxborough area. Local roads in the area are expected to be much busier than usual toward the stadium on match days from up to 4 hours before kickoff and away from the stadium for up to 3 hours after final whistle, with fans and event officials traveling to and from the stadium. Road closures and other changes in traffic conditions will also be in place around the stadium on match days from 6 hours before kickoff until 6 hours after final whistle. All parking for match ticket holders must be pre-booked in advance and is expected to be limited. Parking arrangements for the outlets at Patriot Place will be as usual and spaces will be protected for customers. If you intend on visiting on match days, check parking arrangements with your destination and allow extra time for your trip. And the next article is El Nino arrives, extreme weather, risk rises. Shift could rival recorded historic events since 1950. And it's written by Doyle Rice and Dinah Voiles-Pulver of USA Today. A long-anticipated and dramatic global climate shift has arrived, federal forecasters said June 11th as they confirmed the start of El Niño conditions. The announcement also adds to mounting evidence suggesting this El Niño will be unusually strong, potentially supercharging droughts, heavy rainfall events, and heat waves. Previous El Niños have led to some of the hottest years on record, such as the record-breaking worldwide average temperature in 2024. El Niño is part of a larger climate cycle driven by the temperature of water in parts of the Pacific Ocean. The natural climate pattern affects weather planet-wide, bringing a mixed bag of conditions across the globe. The new forecast from National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Climate Prediction Center anticipates a very strong El Niño. It may grow to rival the strongest El Niño events in historical record, dating back to 1950, the Climate Center's Michelle Lehrer said in an email to USA Today. Meanwhile, not all El Niño effects are devastating. The pattern is also expected to reduce hurricane activity in the Atlantic and could bring a milder winter and lowering heating bills to millions of Americans. But world leaders have expressed concern about the prospect of droughts, heavy rainfall events, and heat waves. The world must treat it as the urgent climate warning it is. El Niño conditions will pour fuel on the fire of a warming world, said United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres in a video statement earlier in June. A strong event could create ripple effects for months to come, and the new forecast says a strong event is increasingly likely. In NOAA's latest update, we have a 63% chance of becoming very strong in the upcoming winter, Lahuro noted. There are seven very strong events in our record, so this event has a decent chance of reaching that level, she said. There is still some uncertainty, with a 1 in 3 chance of this not being a very strong El Niño. While there's no evidence that climate change increases the frequency or intensity of El Niño events, the World Meteorological Organization noted it can amplify the effects. Given that water temperatures in the tropical Pacific are already as much as 10 degrees Fahrenheit above average, concern is rising at the United Nations that this El Niño could feed on that extra heat and devastate vulnerable and unprepared communities worldwide. When federal forecasters confirmed El Niño conditions June 11th, they used data from satellites showing sustained changes in winds and water temperatures in the tropical Pacific Ocean. Those temperatures briefly skyrocketed in the El Niño region during the first week in June to reach record levels for this time of year. They've fallen slightly but remained above previous records on June 9th, according to a visualization by the Climate Reanalyzer at the University of Maine's Climate Change Institute. El Niño is part of a climate cycle known by scientists as El Niño Southern Oscillation, or ENSO. But it was originally recognized by fishermen off the coast of South America in the 1600s, with the appearance of unusually warm water in the Pacific Ocean around Christmas. The name means little boy or Christ child in Spanish. When El Niño conditions aren't present, the cycle can be in neutral or La Niña phases. While this year's event started a bit later than the big El Niños of 2015 in 1997, it's beginning to catch up, Josh Willis, a sea-level researcher at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, said in late May. We'll see how big it gets. Forecasters say it's too soon to know specifics of how it will affect the United States, and it will always be hard to determine El Niño's exact impact on weather. But the climate pattern does have hallmark features that forecasters expect. Watch for hot weather. There is potential for a drier, warmer summer across the Northwest, Northern Plains, and the Upper Midwest, prolonging ongoing drought in some areas and increasing wildfire risk, according to AccuWeather. Overall, El Niño increases the chances of above-average temperatures across the northern and western United States. Rain, finally, in the southeast. El Niños can lead to wet conditions along the Gulf Coast and southeast, easing the ongoing drought conditions in those areas, according to AccuWeather. California could face more rain and snow. California tends to see a much wetter year with El Niño, said Abby Frazier, a geography professor in the Climate, Environment, and Society School at Clark University. It's never a guarantee because every El Niño is different, Frazier said. But often we can expect conditions to be more favorable for things like atmospheric rivers that bring a lot of rain to Southern California. Heavier snowfalls are also possible in the California mountains, according to AccuWeather. Wildfire concerns in Hawaii? Hawaii may also see increased rainfall in the summer, then dry, drought conditions in fall and winter, Frazier said. Atlantic hurricane season could be less active. We can already see signs of El Niño causing increases in upper-level westerly winds across the tropical Atlantic, said Colorado State University hurricane researcher Phil Klotzbach. These winds act to prevent tropical storms from forming. And lastly, the Pacific hurricane season is expected to be busy. All isn't necessarily doom and gloom, the Climate Center's Lahura said. Keep in mind that impacts related to El Niño are not necessarily concerning. While it can increase the chance of seeing more extreme weather across parts of the globe, there are positives such as potentially lower heating bills for the northern tier of the United States during the winter. The likely reduction of tropical cyclone activity over the Atlantic Basin is also potentially beneficial. The next article is DOJ denies wrongdoing in Rhode Island case. Lawyers accused of misleading court in seeking medical records. U.S. District Judge Mary S. McElroy on June 5th referred Department of Justice lawyers for possible disciplinary proceedings. And it's written by Katie Mulvaney of the Providence Journal. In Providence, Rhode Island, The U.S. Department of Justice has completed a review of its own attorneys and determined that a Rhode Island judge's accusations of its lawyers misleading the courts are without merit. U.S. District Judge Mary S. McElroy made the allegations as the Department of Justice was pursuing Rhode Island's hospital records for use seeking treatment for gender dysphoria. The Civil Division has thoroughly reviewed the district court's allegations and concluded that they are without merit. Our attorneys did not misrepresent facts, withhold relevant information, or otherwise mislead the court. The department stands behind its attorneys without reservation and has appealed the district court's erroneous order, the DOJ said in a news release on June 3rd. McElroy accused the DOJ of shopping the case to a Texas judge in its bid to force the hospital to turn over medical records for children receiving gender-affirming care. She faulted lawyers for willfully playing dirty pool by misleading that court. As citizens, we trust that federal prosecutors, when wielding this awesome power against a state, a company, or certainly against vulnerable children, will play fair and be honest with its counterparts and the judiciary, McElroy said in a May 14th ruling quashing enforcement of a subpoena issued by Judge Reed O'Connor in Northern Texas. The subpoena required Rhode Island Hospital to turn over sensitive medical records involving children. McElroy barred the government from receiving or disseminating any documents related to the now invalid subpoena. DOJ has proven unworthy of this trust at every point in this case. It has misrepresented and withheld information to both this court and the United States District Court for the Northern District of Texas. It did so in an obvious effort to shield its recent investigative tactics, previously rejected by other court to review them, from this court's review in favor of a distant forum that DOJ deems friendly to its political positions, she said. Rare and serious accusations. On June 1st, the New York Times published an article highlighting McElroy's May 14th ruling, faulting the government lawyers 2 days before the DOJ news release. Department of Justice attorneys are properly held to the highest standards of ethical conduct. In a May 13, 2026 order, the U.S. District Court for the District of Rhode Island accused Civil Division attorneys of misrepresenting or withholding information in litigation concerning certain administrative subpoenas, the statement read. Such accusations against department attorneys are rare and serious. The department treats them accordingly and is committed to taking all appropriate remedial action where warranted, it continued before announcing the results of its review. The U.S. District Court for the District of Rhode Island said it was aware of the statement issued by the DOJ. The court's rulings and orders speak for themselves and are available on the public docket for review. The Department of Justice has appealed this court's ruling, and the matter remains pending before the First Circuit Court of Appeals. The appellate court will decide this matter in due course, Chief Deputy Court Clerk Frank Perry said in an email. McElroy on June 5th referred to the DOJ lawyers for possible disciplinary proceedings. How did case get here? McElroy took issue, in particular, with representations by a DOJ lawyer to a Texas judge that the hospital had cut off negotiations about the subpoena's terms when a lawyer for the hospital asserted that wasn't the case at all. This representation that the communication with RIH had ceased as of February 4th, 2026, was clearly misleading, if not utterly false, McElroy wrote. Days later, O'Connor of the Northern District of Texas ordered the hospital to provide 5 years' worth of records for use for youths by May 19th so he could view and hold them privately. O'Connor criticized the hospital for flagrant attempts to avoid compliance with his earlier order enforcing the DOJ's subpoena. O'Connor said it was necessary to ensure the preservation of the records. The hospital informed the Texas court that it intended to produce anonymized records to de-identify this information, as agreed by DOJ lawyers. The hospital maintained, nonetheless, that the subpoena was invalid and that it had no legal obligation to produce documents to the DOJ. The hospital has appealed O'Connor's order to the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The First U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which will hear the DOJ's appeal of McElroy's ruling, declined to block O'Connor's order as requested by Rhode Island child advocate Caitlin Medeiros. DOJ investigation underway. The U.S. Department of Justice originally filed the administrative subpoena in July 2025 with a return date by August 7th of that year. It sought sensitive medical information of every minor patient who had received gender-affirming care at that hospital from 2020 to the present. The information included patient names, social security numbers, diagnosis, and details about family relationships, the ruling states. Federal prosecutors in Fort Worth, Texas, have initiated a nationwide investigation into potential violations of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, saying the subpoena is part of that probe. And in sports news, Bailey Birthday bashes Tigers back into finals. And it's written by Cameron Merritt in Dartmouth. Wednesday, June 10th, may have been Anaya Bailey's birthday, but it was the junior catcher and UMass commit who gifted Taunton High softball its sixth straight MIAA Division I championship berth. Bailey came through in the clutch at the plate, leading the way going 3-for-4 with a pair of doubles, a run, and 5 RBIs as the number one Tigers scored a 9-2 win over number 4 Shrewsbury in the MIAA Division I Final Four at UMass Dartmouth. "I'm really happy that I had a good game on my birthday," Bailey said. "It just made the day so much better." From behind the plate, Bailey also aided the efforts of fellow junior Gray Simmons in the circle, with the pitcher going all 7 innings, giving up a pair of runs on 4 hits and 3 walks. "We worked in and out with her fastball, and we also really worked the changeup," Bailey said. "She was doing great with the changeup, keeping it low and outside to get them to chase." For Taunton coach Michelle Raposo, who is headed for her 4th title game in her 4th season at the helm of the Tigers, it all goes to show the strength of Bailey both behind and at the plate. "We knew it was going to be a tougher game because Shrewsbury has some really strong hitters, and she did a really good job calling the pitches," Raposo said, praising both Bailey and Simmons for their adjustments on the fly. After the Colonials put 3 runners on in the top half of the first, only for the Tigers to leave them stranded, Bailey gave her pitcher some extra breathing room by driving in senior center fielder Mia Torres, who was 4-for-4, 3 runs, RBI, and junior shortstop Bella Bork, 3-for-4, 3 runs, and 2 RBIs, on a single to open the scoring. She came home herself 2 at-bats later courtesy of an RBI single by junior third baseman Ashlyn Hebert, 2-for-3 in RBI, to make it 3-0. The Tigers now move on to the Division I title game, slated for 5 p.m. on Saturday, June 13th at Worcester State's Rockwood Field, to face a very familiar foe in number 3 Attleboro. And that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for listening. Again, it's Kelly with the Talking Information Center, reading from the Taunton Daily Gazette. Have a lovely day.